Welcome to the Aussie Villains podcast. We look forward to our European adventure and we are in the top four. This is the Aussie Villains podcast. You can get us on Twitter at Aussie Villains. Get us on Australian Fans and Villa on Facebook and also our Facebook group. You can ask your questions there, join in the banter. This is the Aussie Villains podcast.
Davies was near post. Lo Celso! Driven home quite superbly by Giovanni Lo Celso. Their chances have been coming thick and fast, and that rhythm with Watkins! 1-1 straight away! Fans here in the stadium, everyone around the world waiting for the lines. It will be no goal. It remains 1-0 Spurs. Point Pierre's pass for Son. There's no flag. Son's driving away. It's 2-0. Put away by Son.
He was a yard off.
Yep, check complete. On we go again. No goal. It's a well-flighted ball towards Torres again. Pau Torres, who missed that wonderful chance very early on, this time buries it. And in first half stoppage time, Villa a level. Watkins up there with him. Baby driving on, and he went for a cover. And Vicario gets a bit lucky there with the aid of the post. Porro. Good ball by Højbjerg. Johnson, Son! Again, they look to the flag, and again, the flag's up. Watkins. Tiedemans. Back for Watkins! Really well worked! And Ollie Watkins scores for Aston Villa. Their top scorer. And they're in front here for the first time today.
Welcome to the Aussie Villains podcast. We have Rhino, at home, Rhino.
I am at home. It's good to be back on, fellas.
We've missed you very much. I am also at home. Tess, where are you at the moment?
A little bit of an awkward situation. If I sound weird, it's because I'm on loudspeaker. I'm sitting in the passenger seat of my car. And we're outside a very elegant restaurant called Red Rooster. waiting for the kids to come back in the car with their Red Rooster because we've just been to a kids dance party at the school, which took a little bit longer than expected and chewed up all of my video time and my battery time. So if you guys are interested, I'm ordering a burger pack. So it comes with fries and it comes with four burgers, I think chicken. Because it's Red Rooster, it's a chicken.
Red Rooster, mate, come on.
Sorry. And there looks like there's a bunch of nuggets and stuff like that on the menu. So that's what we're going to have.
Beautiful.
So for our European or English listeners in Australia, we refer to Red Rooster as Red Rooter for no reason other than it sounds rude. And it's got some things I think that are better than KFC. So let's rock and roll on it. I like the Red Rooster, mate.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's amazing, actually. And it's pretty good prices. I have the girls in the car. Does anyone want to say hello? Do you want to say hello, guys?
Hello.
Hey, girls.
There you go.
That's some very cute voices.
That was Hope. Hope's the littlest one. And she always likes talking.
Hi, Hope.
Hey, Hope.
Can you say hi, Pierre? I'm talking to the podcasters, guys. Can you say hi? Okay, she's too shy.
Oh, too short. Well, it doesn't take after her old man. So, look, Tess may or may not drop out, but a couple big...
So she's just sorry to interrupt the podcast again. That was Pia waving to her friends who have also been at the party, and it looks as though all of the parents came to Red Rooster.
It is that time of year, isn't it? It is that time of year.
Yeah.
Boys, can I...
Oh. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello.
Sorry, it's a bit rowdy for a podcast in the car.
No, it's very good. It's a very different Aston Villa podcast. I like it.
That's it. Festive edition. We'll call it that.
We'll call it that. And I'm very, very hungry now. So thanks a lot, guys. Love you all.
Sorry.
I'll have to remember families in the car. So I'll have to be very careful with what I say on this podcast. So
yeah, keep it clean.
Geez, that's hard for me, I can tell you right now. So, guys, we have to ask you a question to start with. We're in fourth on the ladder. It's unbelievable. I know that a few weeks ago you guys were skeptics of me saying that we could make the Champions League. Are you starting to feel it a little bit? Are you feeling it a bit?
Yeah, starting to believe it. You called it very early as well, Paul. So you, I think Josh as well, Josh Donachy, has been very vocal about getting his Champions League spot as well on the group. And yeah, you can't ask for more than that, can you? A win away at Spurs.
What a great win victory. Away, but who cares? Yep.
But I think you have to start believing, don't you? Like
at some point you do.
I mean, the performances, the results that we're picking up, and our placement at the moment in the Premier League is unquestionable. If you look at the whole of 2023 and all the stats that are floating around, it's unquestionable about the way that we're performing. And I think some people have put it into perspective as that we are a top four side now, I think I heard.
Yeah, I think the next games, obviously, we've got Man City and Arsenal coming up. They're huge games now. And if you can get a win or, you know, a couple of draws there, get some positive results against those two, then we're well in the mix.
I think so as well, because we're 5 points clear of Newcastle as well, right? So, and I see Newcastle as one of those contenders, as Unai would say, to be in that sort of top six, seven bracket. And so I know these games are really important against Arsenal and Manchester City, who are favourites to go on and one of them to win the Premier League. But if we can get something from one of them at least, I mean, we are, as you say, Ryan, we're definitely in the mix.
Yeah.
Well, guys, the thing is, it's going to be that kind of year where 5 to 6 teams are taking points off each other. So I think taking draws in each game would be an amazing step.
I agree. I think, yeah, especially those two are, like Tess was saying, favourites to win the league. Any points against those two, we'd be happy and just, yeah, we roll into the new year then, don't we? Or into the Christmas period, I should say, where, it, you know, the games come thick and fast. If we can get something out of those two right high into Christmas, we're on.
Well, guys, one other thing that I think the media is sweeping it under the carpet. I'm not hearing it anywhere. I wonder if people are being told not to comment on it for the fear of being sued. But surely we're third on the ladder at the moment. No, I'm serious. Surely we are third.
It's just the way you said I fear of being sued. And I was like, whoa, they're sweeping us well under the rug.
Well, not us. I'm talking about the, you know, Sky Sports, BT Sports, you know, all of those. They're not talking about the absolute brontosaurus in a kiddie swimming pool that is Manchester City are going to get relegated.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know why people are laughing about this. Evidence charges are nowhere near what City's are.
Mm. But that was one charge.
City surely has to go.
That's one charge. And so just imagine 150, wasn't it 150 odd charges for?
It's 115 charges.
There 115,
was,
sorry.
Yeah. There was around 30 charges actually against Everton. 30 different kind of cases that they could bring up. There's 115 to 151 against Manchester City. And I can't believe no one's talking about this. They're not going to be playing Champions League football next year.
I think if they get found guilty of any of those charges, I reckon they should be expelled from the Premier League and they should have their titles taken away.
Well, they're thinking that will happen to City and also Chelsea will be relegated, because the simple fact is this: there is European precedence and they use European courts of law as a guide. And Juventus lost their titles. They were stripped of their titles in Serie A. So anyone who thinks that won't happen to Manchester City, I think they've got a head in the sand, I think the places are scared to talk about it.
Well, I think the Premier League's setting a precedent now, aren't they? Punishing Everton, Well, they've, you know, and we all know, like you're just saying, the case against City, they have to push forward now and punish City adequately as well, don't they? Because you can't punish one team and not another.
So that's what I'm trying to say, boys. I don't want to make it a City or Chelsea podcast, but that European place jumps one step higher. Because
yeah,
the thing I'm finding weird, guys, and you know, we're not gamblers or anything, but I deliberately went and looked at sites to see the odds for Manchester City of winning the title. Right? Mm-hmm. There's still odds on to win the title. But then my old man came out with a good theory that, of course, they're going to take all the money they can at the moment. The title goes for a few more months. So, of course, they're going to take all the money and let it sit there for the people betting on City. And they'll refund that money if City get kicked out of the comp. And it's a good advert mm-hmm. for all the gambling sites. So don't be fooled by the $1.50 odds on. They're not going to win the title and they're not going to win the Champions League.
Well, I think if we bring it back to Villa, I think that's why our owners have been really, really good and really, really clever in the way that they've done their business to do with all this financial fair play and stuff, because I'm pretty sure there would have been rumours going around executive boards and stuff talking about the Everton situation. Villa would have been made aware from last season about, you know, you're spending all this money and you still need to make some money back, which they did during the summer period, which was really smart and really clever. So, look, I think in terms of financial fair play, I think all teams, including ourselves, should be sensible and responsible. But I do clearly think that there's something not right with the amounts of money that Manchester City over the last maybe five, 10 years have been spending. Mm. I think there's something wrong there. It just doesn't seem right to the average football supporter. And now we know that it's going through all the executive channels and stuff. So I think there's something definitely up there. And I think there is going to be some sort of punishment coming, because you can't have 115 charges and not actually get one of them to sit. I think they have a really clear understanding that there's going to be some of those charges that are going to sit.
And look, this is about Villa, because it gives us an even bigger chance to push for the top four. And if City's out of the title running, then the narrative changes, not only for the Champions League, but a tilt at the title.
Mm.
But you look, we are no worse than Arsenal. We are no worse than Liverpool over the season. And 2023 has stated that. I'll go on record to say if City are out, we're a huge chance. We're going to be in it in the last 2 weeks of the season to win the title.
I think what we do need to do, though, sorry, Rano, if I just butted in there.
No, that's all right, mate. All good.
What we need to do is we actually need to make sure we can put performances against those teams so that we can really prove. Yeah. I know we beat Spurs the other day, but I mean, we'll go into depth in the game shortly, but we need to be beating those teams who are, I guess, traditional top four teams. I don't like top six and top seven, because really there's only really two or three teams in it in reality, I reckon. So we need to actually go about showing that we can actually compete against those teams and get points from them, because our record against them hasn't been good, but this is the first time. I think this is the strongest team that I've seen Villa have, and the strongest performances consistently. We just need to go and show that. And I think we can do that against teams like Arsenal. I think we can do that against Manchester City. We've proved it against sort of Chelsea. But we haven't around the other teams around us, which are Liverpool and Newcastle. Oh, and for City, I mean, if they defend how they defended against Lens, again, in the Champions League recently, then I'm pretty sure we can get goals against them too.
Mm. And I think we'll stand us in good stead as well. Both those games are at home. So, and our home form is incredible at the moment. So we're riding high at home. Bring them on, you know. We can beat anyone at home. The away form's picked up a little bit, but getting those two at home back to back, it'll be difficult. But I feel like we owe Arsenal as well after last season losing in injury time. So yeah, big games coming up.
Well, home form, Rhino, is exactly right. We are on top of the ladder on home form on 18 points from 6 games with an incredible plus 18 goal difference at home. Absolutely incredible.
I've never known us to be this strong at home. You know, it is incredible, the turnaround, where we used to be really timid and meek at home, but now we, you know, we're on an amazing run, and Villa Park is just rocking again.
Yeah,
guys, we've scored 6 more goals at home than any other team in the comp. Oh, sorry, 5 more goals at home than more than any other team in the comp, and that's with Newcastle playing an extra game.
Unbelievable! Unbelievable! This is going to sound a little bit like a bit of a whinge for no reason, but I'd like to see us get a few more clean sheets.
The way we're playing with that high line is not conducive to clean sheets.
No. We have to outscore other teams all the time. And what I do find is that we are actually quite clever when we are on top, especially in the last game against Spurs. Once we took the lead, we just controlled everything. So they had really minimal chances, as opposed to maybe the first half of that game where I think they dominated the game, to be honest.
Well, let's stop you guys there for a moment.
Yeah.
And let's listen to Emery talk about his future at the club, because there's been a lot of speculation that bigger clubs will come in for him. So let's just listen to Emery for a moment.
Unai Emery absolutely delighted with today's result. Aston Villa inside the top 4, tied with Liverpool on points. Things are looking very good for Villa right now. How confident are you in their season?
Absolutely confident, because I'm confident in the coach. I saw him working in the Premier League summer series. We went and watched coaching. His meticulous detail and the way they train was impeccable. It felt like you were in a classroom. You were being taught, not just trained. And there was a great line that John McGinn, I said, what's he like, John? And he said, he's a brilliant coach. He's a bit mad, but he's a brilliant coach. And that kind of sums up Unai Emery and why I think they'll continue to do well.
I agree with almost all of that. 7 wins out of the last 9 is brilliant. Being in the top 4 is fantastic. I just think about the first half there, and I think about some really great chances that they gave up to Tottenham who didn't take advantage of it. And of course, you've got to do that. I still look at that high line sometimes and I think, wow, like, you know, they get away with it at certain times. It's a whole risk-reward process that he goes through, and I get that. And they won today. It's just that they gave up a lot of chances first half. Udogie goes through. There was many chances, really good ones. So I think to stay in that top 4, and I don't know whether he will change too much, because that highlights part of who he is and what the team is. I just think that might at times trip them up a little bit and they might drop points. But that being said, listen, this is a great story. And Villa's a great club and they've got a great manager. Let's see if they can develop and maybe get better on that side of it. And they've got a chance of the top 4 finish. Absolutely.
Interesting. Emery is basically talking about Villa being a big project, a challenging project, one that he wants. So he's obviously aware of the talk about him, you know, being poached by other clubs. But who's a bigger club? I mean, Liverpool, they've got Klopp. Obviously, you know, I don't see where the bigger clubs are coming in for him. And I mean, in other words, you know, like Villa's a great challenge to be a big club. This narrative that he's going to go, I think he's starting to put that to bed.
I think he's putting it to bed. So, because I think he was asked the question, and he said that, you know, he went to Villarreal when it was the right time for him. He gained a lot more experience. I think the question was to do with, he had something to do with his experiences and stuff since he left Arsenal and left the Premier League. But then he said that he came back to Premier League because he wants to do that big challenge. But the project is huge and he wants to be there for a long time. I think the words he used were, I want to be here for a long time. There's a big project to build this club, Aston Villa. I want to build the squad. Build the club up for the fans and supporters. And he knows that he's been given free reign at this football club. No other football club currently in modern days is given the manager the free reign that he will have. He's pretty much having the free reign that Arsene Wenger had when he was at Arsenal. He's getting the chance to build something, not from the ground up, because obviously we're still a very big club in the world. But he's getting a project where we're pretty much started with a blank slate, haven't we, really? Since, you know, we got promoted because we got relegated after really poor form and poor ownership and almost went into administration. And we found a way to get back to the Premier League, and now we're back in that Premier League. He gets a clean slate to try and build something that is in his idea, in his model, in the way that he wants to play football. And which manager out there at the moment wouldn't want that to happen? Which manager wouldn't like to take full control of all footballing matters and having the team that you want to help you with those footballing matters? He's onto something great here. We're lucky to have him, obviously, but there isn't anybody else in any football club currently, in my opinion, that can offer him what Aston Villa is offering him at this stage.
He's also, I suppose he's also very lucky to have Villa, because you've got, I don't consider us one of the big clubs in the world, Tess. I look at the Bayern Munichs, the Dortmunds, you know, the Arsenals, the Man U's, all that. We're mid-tier. If you went anywhere in the world and asked about Villa, not many people are going to consider us a big team. In the scheme of world football, we're not a big team.
Okay, yeah, no, I hear that. I still think we are a big club, not just because, you know, we don't win trophies and all that. And the reason why the Bayern Munichs and the Barcelonas and the Liverpools are out there is because they win trophies most years than yes. not. But Liverpool went through a long, barren period without a trophy.
You saw Liverpool shirts all over the world.
I know what you mean. But that's also partly because other countries get privy to particular clubs around the world. But the Football League was invented and started by, thank you, Aston Villa. You know, with these, there's a few clubs there, obviously, but we are one of those founding.
Yes,
we are one of those founding clubs, and we should be recognised for that. At the moment, what Emery's having the chance to do is trying to get us to be a world recognised club, and the way that happens is that you go into Europe and you play Europe most seasons, and you win Europa Conference Leagues or Europa Cup Leagues, or you're playing in the Champions League every single season, and you're in and around it. And he's got an opportunity to try and mould a squad to make Aston Villa one of those teams that every other country wants to start buying jerseys for, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Ryan, I wanted to ask you about the Tottenham game.
Yep.
The first half, we could have been 4-0 down.
Yeah, I just think that that first 5 minutes, I don't think I've seen a 5 minutes like that for a long, long time, where Tottenham had their chances, but we also had two very good chances as well, all in the space of that first 5 minutes. It was just end-to-end stuff, and it sort of lived up to the billing. You know, Ange Postecoglou's done a fantastic job at Spurs, and they're playing some really good stuff. And even with a few injuries, they still look dangerous. But yeah, that first half, we were under the cosh, and there was one man in there who was just running the show for them, Benton Kerr. He's a brilliant player, and I think, you know, there was two pivotal moments, really. I think it was him going off injured, and then I think the subs at halftime that Emery made the changes and just changed the game. But that first half, you're right, we were, I don't know, we just couldn't get some players into the game, and Diaby just looked...
Probably Diaby's worst game.
Yeah, just well off the pace, just, yeah, not his best game, like you say, probably his worst, you're right. And I just feel like we sort of struggled to get any... you know, any possession or controlled possession in midfield. But I think once Benton Kerr went off for Spurs, that obviously hurt them. And I think in the second half, we grew from there.
And I want to ask both of you this. I consider Tottenham, this is just me, I consider Tottenham, yes, forget, I consider Tottenham on the same kind of level as us in terms of, we're talking about size, right? This week's been a lot of, I've got to be very careful because there's kids in the car, so I'll take my language back.
Oh, the kids are gone. I'm by myself now, by the way. Sorry, I'm by myself.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay. There's been a whole, they're gone. There's been a whole heap of piss take and shit talked by both Tottenham supporter base and Villa supporter base this week about who's the bigger team. I got in a bit of trouble this week because I said, you know what, guys? They're pretty similar size clubs. Forget the history. In terms of support and how they're followed around the world, I think Villa and Tottenham are pretty similar. And then a lot of supporters came out and really got stuck into Matty Cash and that tackle.
Great tackle.
But how hilarious is it for Tottenham fans to come out and say that, you know, Cash caused the injury? Go and watch a whole season's worth or two seasons worth of the tackles that Tottenham have put on players in the last year or two and the injuries they've caused.
Give me a moment. Yeah, the tackle, it's a yellow card. Yep, you take the punishment, but injuries are part and parcel of the game, you know, and tackles like that happen all the time, like you say. And, you know, I've seen a lot of the Spurs stuff on social media, but for me, I was, you know, yellow card, that's enough. And,
Agree.
You just got to get on with it, haven't you?
Geez, Cash was absolutely slaughtered on the weekend. Now, I'm not trying to sledge him, but this is the thing with Cash. When he gives you three or four great games, but when he comes up against a quality opponent, he is caught short. And that's the kind of player that we need in the squad, but we need a better player moving forward to be a European contender year in, year out.
I don't think, like, obviously, Konsa played right back, so they pushed Cash a bit further forward. I just don't, like you say, Paul, I don't think he's at that level where he can push into the midfield, especially against the top clubs like Spurs, where they're very dangerous out wide and you know, have got quality all over the park. So I think that sort of put him at a bit of a disadvantage as well. And I think when Tielemans came on in the second half, you know, at halftime, just changed the game for us. I think we just started to get more possession of the ball. We looked a lot more dangerous with a better quality midfielder in there.
What about, Tess, this one's for you. What about Bailey coming on?
I'll tell you something. We asked questions, didn't we? We asked questions about why Emery keeps playing him. And he's showing us why. He's actually... I'm really happy with Leon Bailey of late. He hasn't been starting games as such, but when he comes on, impact sub. I mean, he's very, very dangerous on a counter attack. And when he's coming on fresh, he's putting in a performance. He's smiling a lot now. You see, he's like, he's smiling every time you see him come on the pitch. He's smiling, and he's having a go. And I'm delighted for him, to be honest. But I'm delighted because it goes to show that, what do we know? Emery's playing him for a reason, and he's showing. I think he's scored a few goals this season as well, and a few assists this season, Leon Bailey. So really happy with what he's doing at the moment. I'd imagine he's going to get a start tomorrow. Tonight, tomorrow, Friday morning for us. Really happy, Paul. I think he's great. What do you think? Because the reason I'm asking you is because you had challenging thoughts.
There's still a couple of things I don't like about his... No, and that was shown against Tottenham when he went down a couple of times and didn't chase back, but that's becoming less.
He's starting to settle in, I think, and he is expressing himself. But I think his overall game is improving, and I just think that time spent with Emery and the tactics, and what's expected of him is starting to shine through. And I think the role off the bench is really suiting him as well. Obviously, he'd probably love to be starting, but a player of his speed and his skill coming on in the second half is always a positive for us because he's so dangerous.
How unlucky was he with the shot that hit the post, bounced back into the keeper?
Yeah.
And gone in. That would have gone in if it was us. Gone in. But look, the big, big thing is we beat Tottenham away. You know, that hoodoo with Tottenham over the last year has been broken. And it was such a pivotal win because it's put us 2 points clear of Tottenham. So as bad as everyone says Tottenham's going, and they have got so many injuries, right? They're only 4 points off top, and they're only 2 points behind us. So
I thought they were great, Paul. I thought they were Tottenham were really, really good. And I wanted to say, when we played Liverpool, we lost 3-0. Everyone was saying this can't get a better time to play Liverpool. They got all these injuries and all these people are out. And then all of a sudden, Trent Alexander is in playing midfield quarterback, and we get peppered and like badly beat. I thought it was a horrible game against Liverpool. And for the first half against Spurs, I thought it was the same. I was like, we're not really taking advantage of them missing Madison and all these players, are we really? And Bissouma and all that. All these players that have come into the side, Lo Celso, Bentancur and all these people, they're showing that they could equally be starting the games instead of those other guys that are currently injured or suspended or whatever it is. Well, but what we did do is we proved that we can play against anyone and we can change our tactic to suit the match that we're going to be playing.
Well, let's talk about tomorrow's game, and then we're going to answer some questions from our listeners and so forth. But we play a huge, huge game tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock. It is 7 o'clock for Rhino. It is 4 o'clock for Spud. And for wherever you are across the country with all our silly time zones at the moment, whatever it is, tomorrow morning we play at near Warsaw at Villa Park with a chance to really put our foot on the, on this table. We can go 3 points clear of Legia with a game to go if we win tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. I think we only need a point as well to get out of the group.
But
the head-to-head is the key here, isn't it? Because Legia beat us in the first game. We're ahead on goal difference, but they're still top of the group because of the head-to-head. So tomorrow's a massive game in a sense that we need to win it, because the whoever finishes second in the group has to play a two-legged playoff game to get into the last 16. For us, I think winning tomorrow is massive. And I think with that in mind, I envisage some changes, but I still think it'll be a core strong team there.
I think it'll be the strongest team we can put out tomorrow, to be honest, because if we get the top of the group, we don't play again till February.
Till March.
Well, there you go. It is absolutely vital, because the two games – with what we're going to be contending for this year, playing two extra games is going to be, we don't want it. We just don't want it.
Yeah. Right?
And we can then concentrate and focus on trying to have a few performances maybe in the FA Cup and keep our performances and consistency up in the Premier League. It's a really good opportunity as well tomorrow morning. So
Who do you boys fancy to start, or what changes do you envisage? I know, Paul, you've said you'd go strong. Would you make any changes, mate?
Yeah, I think I'd start back and worry them with the pace. So I think that would be one of the main changes. I think I'd rest Cash if we can, because we're running out of troops that way.
Yeah,
that I would envisage.
I would like.
What about you, Cass?
Maybe, sorry, guys. Maybe one more. Tillman's potential starting.
I'd like to see us go with a strong team, but I would like to see us, like, I thought Diego Carlos did a really good job against Spurs, and you know, he was there and made some really important tackles and really important blocks, but I'd like to see us go back just to that four at the back, and I'd like to see Cash play in this one, and I'd like to see Konza and Pau Torres play in the middle with Luca Dean on the right. I just think that back line is a lot more balanced in terms of when we're playing out from the back and at home. I just think we just need to be a bit solid if we really want to win this game. Kamara's not suspended for this because it's a European game, right?
No, he's suspended for Bournemouth, so I would definitely be playing him. And then I'd probably. I know this sounds a bit crazy, because he's probably one of our best players this season, is Dagi Luiz. I'd probably be looking to play Tielemans in there with Kamara this game, just because we know Kamara's not going to play at the weekend, and he just probably freshens Dagi up maybe for the weekend.
Do you know what I wouldn't mind seeing, though? So you're right. I think Tielemans, maybe give Dagi a rest. That might be a really good idea. So Tielemans, Kamara, McGinn, and Diaby.
I think it'd be a good game for Diaby to play and start. I think Quiet at the weekend obviously didn't play a lot of minutes, only played 45. So I think a chance for him to get a bit of a confidence boost. Definitely.
I'm going to throw this out there. I think maybe give Ollie a rest. Just start on the bench, if you like, for this game and give Duran some minutes. Do you know what, right?
I'll tell you why. We can't do it. It's not going to happen, Tess. Don't even entertain it. We've got to put this game away in the first half. They're not going to play.
I just think that we've got such a big run of games coming up, and the Christmas period, and you know, players get cold and all this thing, and I don't fancy playing in the cold weather and all this. But God forbid, if something happens to Ollie, we've got a striker who he's barely got any minutes in his system. I think we need to find ways of getting him some minutes, and more than
cup
5 minutes.
Cup games, mate. Mm. Sorry, mate. It's 100%. I love your rationale. It is not going to happen. Don't even entertain it.
Yeah.
No way they're going to do it. None.
I think they go, knowing that we lost away to Legia, I definitely think Watkins will start. And like you say, if we can put the game to bed early, then we'll probably see the change. But I agree with Paul. I think Watkins starts this.
I really like what you're saying, Tess. Don't get me wrong. I'm not having to go at you. I just cannot for the life of me imagine they're going to take that risk because it's a risk at the moment.
I think he's going to make, this is the, I would like to see this in the team. I think he's going to make more than the changes we've discussed. I think I have, if it's not going the way he wants, he will make all the, and bring on all the big guns a bit later. But I don't know why, I've just got this horrible feeling that he's going to try and get minutes into people tomorrow.
I'm the opposite. I think he's going to go really strong, try and get the lead, and then make the changes. I don't think you can always just react.
Yeah.
If things aren't going the way you want, I think we need to get on the front foot. I really think he'll do that.
Mm.
And we've got some questions from people. And
that's
the reason I was going to give you a bit of a stronger answer, guys, about my thoughts about Duran. But that will come into one of the questions we've got. So,
do you want me to take the Facebook questions, Paul? I've got
Yes, please.
Yeah, I've got it up.
We'll start with I don't know if we've got many questions, but we'll certainly start with Facebook.
We've got a few in there, and the first one is Mark Smith, Smithy.
Hey
Smithy.
So he's got a question for us there, and it sort of centres on what we've just been discussing. Who replaces Kamara on Sunday at Bournemouth? And Smithy will be there and in hospitality, so he's going to have a brilliant day down there.
Wicked.
Well, we're very, very proud of you, Smithy. You have a lovely time there, mates. And don't be too polite in the hospitality section. Let your inner villain come out.
Yeah.
I think Tielemans is going to. I think Tielemans is going to be a bit of a jigsaw piece puzzle. I think he'll be the replacement in some way. I think the formation will change. What about you guys?
I agree. I think Tielemans, and I think he's starting to show some really good form now. And he was pivotal against Spurs, and I think he's an ideal replacement to come in there and play with Dougie. I agree formation will probably change again. But yeah, Tielemans for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I'm having all these weird formation feelings. But Tielemans would be the ideal person, I would imagine, to come in and do that job. I just think maybe, I think Ramsey comes back against Bournemouth.
Yeah.
I think Ramsey comes back against Bournemouth because he came on for a few minutes and stuff. And it depends on how he's going during the week and whether he gets any minutes also tomorrow morning. But I think Ramsey would come back in and maybe John McGinn slots in next to, I don't know if Emery is ready to, I don't know. My opinion would be to probably slip Ramsey back in, move McGinn more inside in the middle. That's what I'm thinking at the moment.
Beautiful. Yeah, sounds good, fellas. And the next one, Josh Donaghy. I'd like to know where you would strengthen in January. One position each, and which player would you get in?
Oh, man.
I'm ready to go on this one if you want me to.
Yes, please.
Go for it. So I think we've touched on it, but right back for me is still a position where I see we could do with another specialist right back. Cons has done a really good job there, but I just think a specialist right back, competition for places for cash, will push him on, and just a different option there for us. And the only one I can think of is Kyle Walker-Peters at Southampton. We've spoken about him before on the podcast, so that would be my choice in January.
Yeah, mine will be one that's definitely taking the piss, but I think we need to spring up front as well. I think we'll take Erling Haaland.
Beautiful.
Relegated, and we'll put in a world record. Haaland will bang in 26 goals for the rest of the season at Villa.
Coming off the bench, of course, because Ollie Watkins is in fine form.
starting on the bench, coming on and scoring two goals a game in the last 16 minutes with the least touch of the one.
I wonder if Matt Target's available. Oh, no, he doesn't sit on the bench, sorry. That's a really, really good question. I also believe that probably the area that we need to strengthen most is in the right back position. I think we've almost got two players for every position or elsewhere. But as a name, I actually can't think of one. And I try not to just focus on teams that are playing in England and or in Britain and stuff.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a quality, a half decent or quality right back out there somewhere, maybe in Europe somewhere, that they may be looking at, who cost wise would be sensible. And that would kind of fit in with the style of Emery. I can't actually give a name, sorry, for that question. But no, do you think right back is a space that we need to strengthen?
And then the last question on Facebook, fellas, is from...
Guys, I just want to go back on that. My actual reality is I think we need to sign a goalkeeper, a real strong goalkeeper. I just think defensively, if anything happens to Martin, as we all know... that's a massive weakness for us. So I was thinking, I know people might not like this, but from Cologne, Timo Horn was one I was looking at. Also, Kieran Westwood, who's the Republic of Ireland goalie. I was just looking at a couple this week. I just think there's some good goalkeepers out there and much better than what we've got at the moment.
What you just sent a chill down my spine, mate. When you sort of, I'd forgotten about the backup goalkeeper situation, and obviously... when you said Martinez being out, you've probably swayed me as well, mate. Maybe backup keeper is the most important position to strengthen.
You've done yours. You've got. I would also oscillate towards the defence. We definitely need some stronger defence.
Oh my god, happening here, Paul? Like, we said one, and so far you've given us about five.
Tess, I'm telling you, mate, when you're on podcasts with people long enough, you kind of become fluid, don't you?
Yeah. Hey.
And just last question, from Danny Pettifer, and he's just touching on that there's a lot of talk of Dougie Louise again, Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool want him in January. Surely it's just speculation, ? 100% it's speculation, but when you're playing as well as Dougie is, there's always going to be suitors.
Unsubscribe from Fabrizio Romano. I mean, this guy's been trying to sell Dougie for the last 6 weeks, you know? And he said on an interview himself with, I think it was on the Rest is Football podcast with Gary Lineker, Alan Shearer and Michael Richards, that, you know, he gets contacted by agents and he gets contacted by football clubs to put things out there. If you guys just hear me out for a second, how much was Declan Rice?
Poise 80 odd million, wasn't he, Declan Rice?
Was it about 80 million or something?
Yeah, I think so.
100 million. I think it was maybe 80 to 100 million, let's just say that. And then you got Caicedo, who went from Brighton to Chelsea. Wasn't that like 100 plus?
Dude? Yeah. Yep.
And you're talking about Dougie Luiz, who is better than both of those players.
Declan Rice was 100 million pounds, 130 million Aussie.
Yeah, there you go.
So Declan Rice is 100 million pounds. And Caicedo was what, 110, 120?
Million? Yeah.
Yep.
Come on. Dougie's twice.
There's a race. Yeah. You're not going to like this. You're not going to like this. There's a race factor also involved in English football that is absolutely true. You are going to pay more for an English player because they're English than you are going to pay for a foreign player in the English league at the moment. That is a fact.
But
he would get the right.
Okay, that's fair enough. That's actually true. You could pay more for English players than you do. So, I don't know. I don't know if Declan Rice was worth 100 million, but in today's climate, 100 million it was. But Caicedo was 100 plus, whatever it was, 110, 120, whatever it would have been. And Dougie is twice the player of both of those players.
Agreed. But it comes with the territory, though, doesn't it? We spoke about the interest in Unai Emery earlier and now Dougie Luiz. But when you're a team that's playing as well as Villa, people are going to start looking at your players, and you know, that's just part of football, isn't it, with transfers? But obviously, I just to go back to Danny's question, speculation. There's obviously interest in a player of his quality, but I don't see anything happening in January.
Definitely not.
Absolutely nothing's going to happen in January. We've a chance to play
We're going to be playing for a European title this year. We're going to be playing for a champions spot. We're going to be contending at some point. If we're not for a title, we are contending because we're there, right? So we are contending.
Also, whatever. Yeah.
So, and he was rejected by another English club previously. What I want to do, he's having the best football of his life. He can play as many minutes as he wants. First team football with Villa. Beyond speculation, it's actually almost stupidity because you're actually saying Villa are shit.
He's also playing for his national team again. And when you buy players in January, we all know that the price goes up by at least 30% to 40% So we're talking. So the who asked the question? Was it Danny asked the question?
Danny Pedersen.
So the answer to your question, buddy, is that there isn't a club in the Premier League apart from maybe Manchester City without financial fair play rules that can afford him, because he's easily 150 million plus in January.
A bloody good question by you. We're not putting you down. We're putting down the speculation.
That was a great question.
Yeah, I loved it.
We're putting down the speculation. It seems to be any time a club that's not considered one of the very big clubs has a decent player who was not considered decent. He wasn't considered in the top 20 or 30 midfielders in the comp by any of the experts. So now that whether it's him becoming better or he's been coached better or the combination of all those things, yes, of course, a player's then ripe for people to speculate. Will he have that same success at a so-called bigger club? I doubt it. That's just me. He suits our system to a T and he suits us.
Do you know why he suits us? Because he's got a clear path. He's given the right, the freedom to play in where he likes to play, in his best position, and he gets to control games. He starts every single match. He's playing for his national team. He's happy at Villa. The people that he's playing with making him happy. He's happy. I could possibly see him as a future captain because I'm starting to see a lot of leadership from him on the pitch. Especially,
and he's still young.
He's very young. What, 24?
Yeah.
24, 25. So, he's a top quality player. I've been a bit of a fanboy of his for a long, long time. I used to get frustrated when Dean Smith used to play him out of position in that sort of deeper role where, you know, that's not his place to play. That's not really where he likes to play. I was frustrated when you got people like Steven Gerrard come in and sabotaging the football club. And you get a proper coach. A proper coach who has the respect of all the players, who knows where each player should be playing and how to add to their game. And I think he's in the best place he could be.
Absolutely.
He could go to one of those top clubs, and all of a sudden, after 6 months, you get the transfer window and they're looking to buy someone in to replace you or something, you know. So, So, great question, by the way, which allowed me to have a rant about how good Dougie Luiz is and how expensive he was. It will be very expensive.
We've got a few questions on Twitter, very similar ones to what we've already been asked. If we've covered it, we'll just cover any gaps here. So Johnny Five, FPL John Boy, says, other than subkeeper, who do you think will sign in January? So we've kind of covered that. The Everton debacle has me worried about signing anyone. And look, that's why I think there's going to be a real chance in January that some players will go for cheaper prices than they normally would. This is what I probably want to counter with you, Tess, is that clubs are going to be scared fruitless. You know what I mean? They're going to be scared of the financial fair play. They're going to be scared of overspending. And there could actually be some bargains there. So if there is a bargain there, look, we're going to need to strengthen. There's no doubt. We're not going to go wholesale in January. I would expect, what, maybe two or three max?
I'd expect a few to go out and maybe one or two in.
Yeah, I'm thinking there will be a lot more exits than there will be incomings. I'd be happy to see, even if we made one signing, and if it was in that sort of, as we've discussed, in that defensive right-back position to... Because Cashy hasn't really got any competition at the moment, does he really, has he? I mean, Cons is a centre-back and he's been... being taught how to play a little bit wider in that right back position, but even against Spurs, I thought, "Oh, we don't want to do that. We don't really want to do that on a regular basis." Because Conte's better playing in the middle, he has a really good understand.
What's happening with Alex Moreno at the moment?
I think he's fit, and I think Emery doesn't think he's ready. I don't know how to put that. Yeah.
Well, he'll cover Luca Dean. It'll be him and Luca Dean at left back, won't he? And I think that's where we sort of fall apart. Is, you know, we got the two left backs over that side battling around. Alex Murray, I think, is really close. He's, you know, he's starting to make the squads. But yeah, with Cash, he hasn't had competition, solid competition for a while now, and he's playing really well. He's had a great season, Matty Cash. Yeah, yeah. But you know, every club needs good competition across the field. And I still think there's other positions as well where we could do with strengthening, as Paul said, backup keeper, etc. But yeah, the right back for me is a glaringly obvious one.
Do we go for Mbappe? Do we go for Mbappe?
Yes, 100%.
Is it Kuala Moani?
Yeah.
Go for him instead.
No, some good questions here, though, guys. Got a couple more. And then we got one from Spud, who's not with us tonight. So. Yeah. Well, the second one is from Richard Edwards, and it's a similar one. So we probably have covered this one, but we'll still read it out.
Is this the Villa podcast?
I don't know, mate. I'm a bit tired. Rooster Edwards asks, do you think we need to buy in January? Yes, we have covered that, but we appreciate the question. And who fills in for Kamara? And we've kind of covered that one as well. But a great question again, Richard. When you put a question up, you're not sure that someone else has asked it previously. So,
yeah. But cheers for asking the question though, Richard. Like, it's nice to know people are keen to engage with us. That's awesome. Thank you.
Rooster Edwards. I want to know a bit more about that, because I would have called you Dick Edwards, being Richard, but the big dick is where it could come from there.
He's probably been on a journey like I have, and it should be like the Red Rooster. He might be a chicken fan.
Wait, let's have a good look. Because his surname's Edwards, right? Dick Edwards, Rooster Edwards, Rooted. I don't know. There's a few little nicknames there for you, Dick. but please still continue to listen and write to the pod after I've just played with you. Sam, at Sam Someone, do you think Emery got the tactics wrong first half, or was it just a poor performance? Go for it, guys. Go for it.
Yeah, a bit of both, I would say. I think there was some poor performances there, really, that contributed. Some people were anonymous. I didn't think playing Cash in that midfield spot was a great call, but who am I to say? Unai Emery's the master, isn't he? But yeah, a bit of both for me. Tactics and personnel just didn't fire in the first half.
Yeah. Firstly, what was the name of the person that asked the question? Sorry.
I love this one. It's Sam _ someone.
Sam _ someone. Okay. I think I don't know about getting the tactics wrong, because it's really hard to plan against a team that hasn't been playing together for a long, long time. So I think he put a team in that he thinks can impose the idea that we have and in the style that we're going to play. Because they were missing certain people. But I don't think he was able to anticipate that Gil would be playing on the left against Cashi and Konsa, who's a kind of tricky kind of player, isn't he, when you see him?
Excellent gravity.
But I found that he kept getting the ball on the wing there and passing the ball back. He wasn't trying to penetrate us that much during that first half. But, you know, we were away from Bentancur, who just was dictating everything. And we couldn't get close to them. So I just think we had a really poor first half. Apart from that, there was poor performances. And I don't know if any of you guys realised, but in the first half, I was watching Diaby's movement and stuff, and he was trying to make runs, etc. I just don't think he was up for that game. He was throwing his hands up like a Buendia, that, like, pretty much for the whole of the first half. And I think maybe Emery noticed that he wasn't up for it, or he was just really frustrated, throwing his hands up all the time, and took him off at halftime to make some changes to make sure that we were playing in the style that could actually beat Tottenham. Did any of you guys notice that?
I did. And I noticed that also with Watkins. Watkins was doing his old role where he had to chase everyone round like a chook with a head cut off. And it wasn't his fault, but he was left just chasing people, where his best game, yes, it is to shut people down, but he's got to provide danger. And when he's running around just chasing everyone, and that's what Diaby was trying to do, we lose that little bit of bite.
And that's what I think was happening, though. I think the frustration was is that Watkins ended up having to do that running in the first half because Diaby wasn't doing it enough and was expecting the ball to come to him that much. And so I found that kind of Diaby kind of sat back a little bit. And then Watkins was trying to do that run across the whole of the, you know, chasing the press, trying to press high and all that kind of stuff. I felt like he should have just been on his side because normally, you know, they press, each one presses on each side, don't they? Like kind of like Watkins will press from the left-hand side and then Diaby will do press from the front from the right-hand side. But Diaby wasn't doing that in the game. I don't know if that was the instructions, but he just kept throwing his arms up. And I was getting frustrated watching him because I was like, I don't think you're even up for the game today. You know,
yeah,
a couple of balls have not gone to you and some passes have been misread, but you're just throwing your arms back and looking back at people and getting the game. And Watkins end up trying to run and chase people down and all that kind of stuff. So
I think Watkins feels that. And I think Watkins is really good at hiding that. Like you can see it at times where the ball should have gone through to him and it wasn't. You know, or someone takes the ball on and has a shot from distance where they could have slid it through to Watkins. I just think Watkins' maturity is that he doesn't show it as much.
Yeah, yeah. It was a great finish, though, wasn't it? We didn't talk about the goal. It was a really good finish from Watkins.
Wasn't just a great finish, but the lead-up play. And again, he just knew. It was like a training park drill. He just knew that he was going to get that ball back. And I just thought it was gorgeous football. And if he didn't take that touch straight away, like people are saying it was a toe poke, I've got no problems with a toe poke. I scored 20 goals.
Don't care what toe poke is. Don't care about toe pokes. Get it in the back of the net.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shoot beautifully and not score, or, you know, it was gorgeous. If he had done anything else, he was going to be closed down.
The ball through to him as well was just weighted perfectly from Tielemans, and like you say, the first touch from Ollie was class as well, because there was two defenders on him, so his first touch had to be spot on to put himself just in front into the box and into space, and he did. It was just perfect touch, perfect finish. And even just going back to the first goal, Pau Torres probably should have got one early on. Similar thing, header, should have buried it, just curled it around the post. But again, he's a real threat from set pieces. He seems to find space and seems to find his way to the ball. He's just got that knack.
He's taller than you think as well.
Yeah, he is. He's a big threat, and, you know, Luca Dean had a great game again, put some balls in there that were just threatening all game. But then Dougie Louise from the other side, the free kicks are just on a plate for these guys. And yeah, I just think Pau Torres, he finds that space, and he's got a very good football brain, and his movement is superb.
I think people were harsh on him for that first miss. I don't think it was the sitter that everyone thought. When you watch the angle of the ball, yes, he should have put it on target. But I've seen far worse than that miss.
I think it's definitely someone of his quality. You expect him to finish it, I guess. But you're right, it's still a difficult chance. But,
he made up for it. Thanks for bringing that up about him, because I just wanted to touch on this, guys. His excitement in scoring that goal wasn't just about him scoring the goal. It looked like relief. It looked like just excitement and relief. You go back and watch it and watch him run, pumping the air. It didn't feel like it was about him.
No, and I think because we'd been under so much pressure in that first half, scoring in injury time at the end there, I think he knew that's a big, big moment. You know, you go in 1-1 after being under the pump, the confidence boost that gives you, I think he knew that's a massive moment.
How many times we've dominated games in the last few years and given up a lead straight away? And look, let's face it, we were extremely unlucky not to score the equaliser through Watkins. He was offside again, where the VAR...
His testicle was ahead of the line.
Well, yeah, spot on. VAR on one side, when they reverse the angle, he looks onside. And it's almost like they draw the line to prove a point.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's conspiracy, but... by the letter of the law, that's absolutely offside. But if you reverse the angle, he looks onside. It's just, It's not right. VAR's not right at the moment. For anyone I'm talking, we you know, Son had a hat-trick of offside goals, didn't he? VAR goals on the weekend.
But the difference is we are the best at setting that trap. We are, in this league at the moment, we are without doubt the best at setting up the offside trap.
Now, I haven't got the stats in front of me, but I think I had a look the other day, and we've had 152 opponents offside with the VAR, with the our high line, and I think the closest after that is about 70 or 80.
Jeez.
I haven't got the stat in front of me. I read it today, and I think we were almost double any other team in the whole comp. So you live by the high line, you die by it.
I think I saw something that Spurs were the next team to have the most players offside or something like that.
And it might have been 78 season. Or something.
Sorry?
I think we were 152 and they were like 78.
I'm not sure what the numbers were, but we must have got them offside at least 10 times in that game. I don't know how many it was.
Well, three goals were offside.
Well, three goals, you know. And then there were other opportunities for other players who were offside and stuff. So we are the best at setting the offside trap, and that's because of the way that we play the high line. It is living dangerously. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes my heart is in my mouth, but they know what they're doing, don't they? They really do know.
Absolutely.
What they're doing.
They are drilled brilliantly. And before we get our final question off Spud, Zaniolo, guys.
Where is he?
Any chance he comes into the team tomorrow?
Where is he, though?
I don't know, actually. It's a very good point. I don't know whether he's
injured. Was he?
He's not injured.
He wasn't on the bench, though, was he, for the Tottenham game?
Well, maybe he'll be on the bench tomorrow. He's not injured.
Yeah, I just assumed that he might have picked up a knock on the international break. But, yeah, you're right. Possibly a chance for him to start if he is fit.
Do you know what before we get to Spud's question, you know what I really like about Emery? If you don't ask him, he doesn't tell you.
Like, yeah, that's a good call.
The press didn't ask about Zaniolo, though.
Does his wife have to say, "Do you love me"?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I love it when he gives the press conferences. He did a really interesting conference again just before the Legia Warsaw or Legia Warsaw or whatever. And they were asked about Matt Cash and injuries. Like, yeah, no, fine. I noticed that he wasn't on the bench for the Spurs game. Well, I didn't think I saw his name.
No, he wasn't.
And none of us were asking questions until now, Paul, which is you. You were the first person that I've heard this week ask about what happened to Zaniolo. Where is he?
Yeah, well, it wasn't planned, so there you go. Even I was forgetting, but don't know. I don't think he's injured. I was looking through our injury list, and I don't think so. Maybe he's just out of favour. Who knows? He's not doing what is. We were just talking about being well drilled, and maybe he's not doing that at the moment. But he could be nice and handy tomorrow.
Is he? How long is it his loan for? Is it for the season or is it just until January?
It's a season, I believe.
Oh, I thought it was a season as well.
But no option to buy.
I think there's an option to buy in there as well. I'm not 100% in the deals, but I thought there was. I thought it was a season-long loan with the option at the end.
I thought so as well.
But you don't have to buy him. It's just an option to buy.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Correct us, any listeners, correct us on any of these non-facts when we don't have them in front of us. So we take no umbrage to that. We don't pretend to be the absolute experts. We're just talking Villa.
Do you know why I'm asking? It's just because I've seen him, and I think it's just probably adjusting to the Premier League and the pace of the Premier League, because I think he was playing somewhere in Turkey before, like Galatasaray.
Yeah. Yep.
But I don't think there's any chance on earth he starts ahead on that left-hand side ahead of Ramsey at any game if Ramsey's fit.
Here we go, guys.
Sorry, I had to throw that in there.
Just having a look, guys. We paid $4.25 million loan fee, and there is a conditional compulsory purchase option. Now, that could be that he has to play a certain amount. If he plays a certain amount of games, because it does not say anywhere what that conditional compulsory purchase option is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he has to play a certain amount of games, that might be a reason that he's not playing at the moment.
Okay.
Possible.
Because, I've just looked at another one there, and it says as well, it's a conditional compulsory move.
So in other words, if he hits some certain targets where, here we go. I've just looked at the third article. It says if certain articles are a certain criteria hit, we have to pay $19.2 million plus $13.2 million in add-ons to make Zaniolo's move permanent. So, well, I would suggest maybe, guys, a bit of a conspiracy theory here, that we're not that keen on him, so we're not going to let him hit the criteria.
I think they're just being very sensible about how they do that, because they needed somebody to come in, didn't they, really? Because Buendia was gone and injured. You know, Ramsey was got injured and all these sorts of things. Do you reckon...
A lot of money, though, isn't it, for a loan fee? Then potentially, you know, $30 million. You'd think that $19 million will be... the fee that we would pay for him, and then the $13 million could be, you know, add-ons to him.
Yeah. I think the $4.2 million is, I don't think it's a bad fee to pay for a season-long loan. So you're basically getting a player for a season for $4.2 million to have some influence. But I guess if there is that condition that you have to buy him if he plays this many games or blah, 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 then I think some teams actually do manage it if they feel like they're not going to fit in with what they're trying to do. But honestly, guys, any of you guys think that he starts ahead of Ramsey if Ramsey's fit?
No.
No, I think it's horses for courses. And I think with the amount of games being in Europe, cup competitions and stuff, I see Ramsey, obviously, once he's back fit.
Just class, guys. He knows the team. He knows the formation. He just gives us a little bit more.
They're very different players, and I think you need that in the squad as well. I think, you know...
He gives a sense of calm to me. He sees the space.
Do you think he'd maybe be better as a sort of backup to Diaby, playing just behind the Watkins?
I do, mate. I think that's his position. I think for his size and his, he's a powerful runner. I just think you're right. That's where I would see him, is, you know, that Diaby position.
Guys, before we close it out, we've got to ask Spud's question here. Yes. Answer Spud's question. So my question for the crew tonight, hypothetically, if you were offered Leicester's scenario for Aston Villa, would you take it? That is, winning the Premier League once, winning the FA Cup, but it means you are relegated again within 6 years.
It's a very good question.
So we're guaranteed the Premier League, we're guaranteed an FA Cup, but we're relegated within 6 years.
What a great question. He always asks such good questions, he does, doesn't he?
You
go first, Paul.
Absolutely no way on God's earth. I think our project with Emery and the board and everyone, I think, is long-term. And we don't know what's going to happen, obviously. You've got that thing of you're guaranteed to win a Premier League title and you're guaranteed the FA Cup, but relegation means who knows if you're coming back and how you're going to come back. So for me, we wouldn't have Emery. We wouldn't have any of our players we've got now. So, no, I absolutely would not take it.
I'm the same opinion. I don't think I would take it. And we've already been relegated. I don't ever want to see this club relegated ever again. It was the worst period of watching football that I've ever had, because I don't tend to watch a lot of the other football teams, when they're live. I watch games if we're not playing, and I watch a game that way. But other than that, I like watching us play all the time.
We were horrendous. We were horrendous in the championship as well. We were disgusting.
It was horrible to watch. Watching Steve Bruce-type football and...
Roberto Di Matteo.
Roberto Di Matteo, and watching all that absolute rubbish. And it was a really bad time for watching Aston Villa, to be honest with you. And, you know, watching games at all times of the day and all times of the night, midweek and all this sort of stuff. I would never want to see that again. What I wouldn't mind doing, and even if we didn't win the Premier League, I want to see us competing for it every season. And that would get me excited week in, week out to watch Villa play. If you're up there competing against those couple of teams at the top where you're competing from the Premier League and you're competing in Europe and you're competing in the domestic trophies, I'd rather have that and have what we currently have and see this project go from a relegated team to somebody once described us on Talksport or somewhere as a sleeping giant, and I agree. Oh, it's maybe Anton Ferdinand. It could have been someone like that. I don't know. They said, you know, Aston Villa's a sleeping giant at the moment. And since Emery's come in, he's proven that we are. And I don't think I would trade that. Go, Rhino.
I'm very tempted, to be honest, with winning a Premier League and an FA Cup. You know, as Villa fans, it's been a long, long, you know, we obviously haven't won the Premier League, and it's been a long time since we won, you know, a cup like the FA Cup. It's a brilliant question. I'm so tempted by it, because once you win something like the Premier League, that, and in our lifetime as well, I think the older I get, the more that I realise that, you know, there is potential you might never see Villa win a Premier League. So that weighs on me in this question. Like, and just to be able to celebrate winning a Premier League with, obviously, my brother, my old man, and Villa fans as well. And, you know, I'd probably go with it just to be able to have those memories, the celebrations of having the Premier League, being able to celebrate or be there, you know, with my brother in the stands, if I could get back free and get a ticket, probably easier said than done. But those memories are just priceless for me. And winning stuff is what it's about. So I'm going to give a different opinion, and I'm going to go, I'll go with it. I'll take the Premier League and the FA Cup.
That's a great, you know, look, you can't give a wrong answer on this one.
No.
I can only speak for myself, and I know you're a Richmond supporter as well, Rhino, but yep. I waited 37 years, and many of those 37 years we would have been relegated if there was relegation in the AFL 4, 5, 6 times. We would have been welcome to Wrexham, welcome to Richmond, yep. It would have been, because we were that bad. And when we won that premiership in 2017, I know I've been lucky enough to see us win 3 premierships in Rhino and 3 premierships in the last 3 years. My cup is full. I honestly, if Richmond never won a premiership again, I've seen something I never thought I'd see. So I actually understand your sentiment perfectly.
Yeah.
What a great way to end the pod.
Brilliant question. Boys, another grenade from Spud.
Boys, the Red Rooster, or at the start, the Red Rooter, as we would say, has got me hungry. So I think, Tess has just dropped out. There we go. He did say his battery is running out. So I think the Red Rooter might have got rid of. Well, I'm about to eat. Rhino, I know it's later for you, mate, but let's hopefully in the morning we get a beautiful result against Legia Warsaw.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks to everyone who's putting questions on socials. Keep them coming in. We love this part of it. We really love the community that's building around the podcast.
Absolutely. As always, Rhino. Up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Awesome, mate. Well, I'll try and...
Thanks for joining us for another Aussie Villains podcast. Let's hope for 3 points in Europe and 3 points on the weekend as well. You can get us at Aussie Villains on Twitter or X, whatever you want to bloody call it. You can get us on Facebook at Australian Fans of Villa, and also our Facebook group. My name's Paul. Get me at _football if you choose to. This is the Aussie Villains podcast. As always, up the Villa. And the song you're listening to is from Letters to Cleo, Here and Now. One of my favourite tunes in the 90s, but you know, what do you do?